This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
But those Capitals, let's talk about them for a moment. Two games this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Arch rival Penguins, really good Edmonton Oilers. Two wins. 8-3 over Pittsburgh, 7-3 over Edmonton. A 15-6 weekend where they were +9 in goal differential and 9 different players on this team scored a goal. Do you remember how bad they were offensively last year?
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't score.
That was a month for them. 8 goals.
They never got to 5. Like 6 or 7 was, you know, a dream. And they just didn't have firepower. Now they had 9 different guys this weekend score a goal. They had 2 different fellas in net both shine and get wins. If you look at their season credentials right now, 84 points, 12 points better than any other team in the Eastern Conference, and 1 point up over Winnipeg for the most points right now in the National Hockey League by any team. Nobody thought they were going to be in the convo to win the Metro. Very few people on paper had this team making the playoffs. And as we sit here today on February 24th, the Washington Capitals are the best team in the NHL. Alex Ovechkin is almost certainly going to break Gretzky's record because he's scoring at a pace nobody gave him a chance to at 39 years old. And they are the best team in hockey. We're talking Stanley Cup good.
That's how great it's been. I mean, I was one of those folks. I'm not an expert by any stretch, but I said, you know, I see what they've done. I like it. They've improved on the margins, and you hope for some upside guys like Pierre-Luc Dubois find a home here and fold into the culture and play well. And, you know, I know Jacob Chychrun's got a lot of skill, but, you know, we'll see if it all comes together. And then it came together incredibly. And Ovechkin at 39 years old, despite not being able to move around like he used to, he's just like sort of a great white shark just kind of drifting around in the ocean, and the prey comes to him.
I think McClellan at this point, Brian McClellan, general manager, Washington Capitals, has to be viewed as the best general manager in this town.
Yeah.
I've long been a Rizzo guy. I think he does a really good job and doesn't really get a whole lot of
resources. It's not what Rizzo did wrong.
No.
You know?
I love Adam Peters and his handsomeness and the fact that he's batting 1,000. He's 1-for-1, so he's in the convo. But who's had a better offseason than McClellan? The number of moves they made, a plethora of moves that all kind of worked beautifully. And respectfully to the Commanders, who had a similar thing go on, they had a worst-to-first type build, if not for the Eagles, where it was an overnight renaissance. But we don't know if there's going to be any sustainability to it. And they were never really the best team in the league. That was not the conversation. The Capitals, on the fly, thanks in some part to Backstrom's money being freed up, Oshie's money being freed up with those guys effectively, you know, retired at this point, they were able to go out and spend, and they did some things that they got crushed for.
Yeah.
The Pierre-Luc Dubois trade, everybody thought was a mistake. This guy's a problem child. This is the Kuznetsov deal all over again. What the heck are you thinking? He's been outstanding for them. They made the deal to go get Logan Thompson in net. He has been unbelievable. The smaller deals, the back end of their four lines with Duhaime and Radish, excellent. Their moves along the defense. You mentioned Chychrun, who's an all-star player. He's the man. They need to re-sign him now for all of the money. But who's had a better year than McClellan has had with the Capitals here?
Maybe we should be throwing rose petals at his feet like he's the Prince of Zamunda. I mean, it's unbelievable what's happening. And it relishing in the joy of this, because it's unexpected. Like, the expectation, like when they were doing President's Trophy, it seemed every other year, and they were the one seed or whatever, coming off the heels of this thing that I usually say you can't do, by the way, just because I've seen, I don't know, a billion examples of it, where you are kind of limping along with an aging cast and you're centered around this thing. And it was like, it's a fun sideshow. It's worth it, by the way, to try to set the goals record and what we thought was unbreakable, to try to chase down Gretzky. Let's field a decent team around him. Instead of doing what you maybe needed to do, if competing was the most important thing, which is tear the thing down and rebuild, which is how you got great in the first place. The Rock the Red era began with that. So you go, you're trying to build in the middle, which I understand, because this goals record is unbelievable, right? It's incredible. Such a cool thing for this town, for hockey, for the sport, for Ovechkin. You owe it to him. You're damn right. So they're doing this thing where they're kind of building in the middle. I'm going, yeah, you know, you can be a team that barely makes the playoffs and is cannon fodder for somebody that's really good. You can lose in the first round again, but it's going to be a great journey. We're going to get the goals record while this happens.
It felt like we were just destined for spinning
our
wheels.
You're stuck there.
You're hoping to make the playoffs, and maybe puck luck goes your way, and you win a series or two, and you get to an ECF. But for the most part, this is going to be a middling Eastern Conference team.
I mean, you're the sort of the permanent Atlanta Hawks without the goals with the goals record. You know what I mean? So like, I don't, and I got it. I understood. Nobody thought this. How would you like to lose today? You want to lose 2-1? You want a slugfest? I got you. You want to get scored on a million times? You want to have your goalie skate in shame over to the bench to have another guy come in because we're going to put up a touchdown and go for two on your buttocks? Fine. However you'd like to lose, we got you.
They're so good.
They're great.
I was sitting there yesterday. I was at the game, one of the great games I've been at in some time, getting to see Alex Ovechkin go hat trick in a 7-goal output in a win over Edmonton. My brother and my wife were with me, and we just kept kind of looking at each other going, this team's amazing.
They're so good.
They're whooping the Oilers' ass. Like, this is not them playing against the San Jose Sharks or the Chicago Blackhawks, right? They are playing the 7th best team in the NHL right now, and they are destroying them. And you could see it post-game with Spencer Carberry, who's a rock star, their second-year head coach. Again, everything they do turns to gold, including that hiring. But he's addressing the team, and you could just tell how proud he was. He's like, from the first shift, I could tell you guys knew the assignment. Like, you had it, the style this game needed to be, the effort, the intensity. And oh, by the way, we haven't really acknowledged this, second day of a back-to-back.
Yeah.
Back home for the first time since Super Bowl Sunday. So the electricity in the barn was amazing. And we really haven't even talked about Alex Ovechkin yet, who essentially took the Penguins game off as they scored 8 goals without him, and then scored not one or two, but 3 goals yesterday to get to within 12 on the all-time count of Wayne Gretzky's record. He's 13 away from breaking it. He's 12 away from tying it. There's 25 games to play. This thing is happening this year.
Connor McDavid still without a shot on goal today with 2:40 to go in the third period. And a puck that comes to Ovechkin. He scores! He did it! He did it! It's a hat trick for Ovechkin! Ty Emberson's stick broke on the center point shot attempt. And Ovechkin with a hat trick. It's 8:82. And the Capitals lead it 7-3. You gotta be here to believe it.
And I was there, and I believe it. John Walton on the call, as heard right here on 106.7. The Fan, you just can't make it up, man. His first goal was awesome. He was in transition. It was a drop pass. It was kind of a drag move and then a wrister. And he added another goalie to the longest list in history in terms of the number of goalies that have been scored on.
Mm-hmm.
His second goal was a patented Ovechkin in his office power play snipe. And then that empty netter to put the game on ice with Edmonton pulling the goaltender in the waning moments. A hat trick for Ovechkin. He's had hat tricks, not just How many has he had? Hat tricks against 20 different franchises. That is the craziest stat ever. Like this thing that 99% of players will never do, Danny, a hat trick in an NHL game, he has done against 20 different franchises.
Grant, he's seventh in the league in goals, despite having a broken leg this season. Seventh in the league in goals, I say again, despite missing some time with a broken leg. This is stupid. We've gone past ludicrous. We've gone past impossible. We're in some other kind of territory that not only does it not make sense, but if you try to quantify it and explain it, you're left more befuddled than when you start. Information in general is so wonderful. I love it. I love information. We should never shy away from information, even if it doesn't help our cause. The more data that comes your way, the more you shrug your shoulders like Jordan against Portland. I don't understand this.
Well, I saw a stat today, to your point, about how many teams Alex Ovechkin would be leading in goals right now. Because he's still one of the, as you're pointing out, one of the highest goal scorers in the NHL. But they did not acknowledge that he missed 5 weeks of hockey. They just said, Alex Ovechkin's 39. This is how many teams he'd be leading in the NHL in goals right now. Which is impressive. And you didn't even mention that he missed 5 weeks of hockey. Or else he'd be running away with the goals crown, the Rocket Richard. And I probably would have seen him break Gretzky's record with the hat trick yesterday. He would have already broke this damn thing. But it is happening at the end of this year. Tickets are going to be through the roof. I don't think anybody got into the building last night for less than $100 from what I saw in the secondary market. If you haven't already started to buy up those tickets at the end of the season, my guess is it might be too late. You're going to be paying a lot of money. Although you might still get some ROI. If you scoop a ticket today, you might be able to turn around on the day of the game at the end of the year if he's breaking the record and sell it for more. But that's a dangerous game at this point.
Yeah, it's roll the dice.
Because that number's climbing. But I had a little predicament yesterday, Danny. I tweeted about this, and I'm prepared to take a lot of heat for this, I believe. So I bought a brand new Caps lid at the team store yesterday after the first period of the game. They were up 2-1 after period one. I believe Tom Wilson and Jacob Chychrun had scored goals. I was feeling great. I went to the game without a hat on purpose, even though I'm a hat guy, because I wanted to get a new Caps lid. I've got a bunch of Caps hats at home, but I wanted to get a new hat that I had seen that I thought looked pretty cool. It's like a white hat with the kind of a white and blue Caps logo.
Mm-hmm.
I bought the hat and went and sat down in my seat for the second period. Alex Ovechkin proceeded to score two goals.
Yeah, he did.
One at even strength and one on the power play in the second period. And then I tweeted out before the third period a picture of the hat. And I said, just bought a new Caps hat before the second period. Ovi has scored two goals since. Now I'm conflicted. If he scores again, do I throw my brand new hat on the ice? Tough call. I don't know when the last time you guys bought a nice hat was. They cost closer to $50 now than $30. It's like $40+. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the exact number, 43, 45, 47, 49, something like that. It's almost $50. We'll round it up. I just bought the damn thing.
Yeah. It's been on your head for an hour?
I've been lucky enough to be at many an Ovechkin hat trick in my day. I've thrown several hats on the ice that I will never get back. My only policy in the past has been if I was wearing the 2018 Stanley Cup hat and he had two goals, I have made deals with people around me. I will not be throwing this on the ice because I don't know if I can get another one of these. This is my Stanley Cup hat. It's a keepsake. Like, I can't do that. But I typically don't wear it to games for that reason. I normally wear a hat to a game I'm willing to throw on the ice. I think about these things. But Danny, as I do the show today on the 106.7 The Fan YouTube page.
Here's the reveal. That's yesterday's hat, people.
I am still wearing my brand new Caps hat.
Did you take it off even to go to bed? Did you keep it on?
He scored his third goal.
Yes, he did.
I immediately shoved the hat under my hoodie so that I didn't get any crap or people weren't yelling at me and everything. I just put it right under my hoodie, right between my hairy gut and my undershirt. I did throw many hats on the ice because the hats come flying down from all the rafters and the sections and into the lower bowl, and then they come down toward the glass, and I happen to be sitting very close.
You happen to be sitting so close?
I happen to be sitting
very
close.
What a special treat for you to get that. You never get that.
No, yesterday was a rare
occasion. Yeah, right there on the glass.
I was right there in the front row on the glass, which was amazing, by the way. What a way to watch the game.
That's good.
And so I got to grab a bunch of hats and toss them over and throw them. So I probably threw more hats on the ice than anybody. I would even say over 15 hats thrown on the ice by me in these hands.
So you're really the hero of the story.
I'm not suggesting I'm the hero of the story. I'm just saying you can't say I didn't throw a hat on the ice. I guess you'd be right because I threw close to 20 hats on the ice.
Right, but the distinction is important. You didn't throw your hat on the ice.
The brand new hat, which I had just spent almost $50 on, I did not throw on the ice.
Yep.
I have thrown hats on the ice before.
Sure.
And I'm here to tell everyone listening, I would have thrown any hat on the ice that was an old hat that I showed up at the arena with.
Non-Stanley Cup 2018 hat. And then the brand new hat. Yeah, but just saying, if you happen to have that one on.
You guys have seen me wear Caps hats. Mm-hmm. If you've ever been at a game or you ever watch us on YouTube, probably 90% of days I'm wearing a Caps hat. Any of those would have been chucked onto the ice.
Yep.
Not this hat.
Not this one.
In a month, probably. It's probably dirty or it's had, you know, it's gotten some wear.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I could talk myself into that if Ovi has another hat trick in a month. It seems like people would very upset with the idea that I was considering not throwing the hat. And here I am, just a boy on his knees begging for your forgiveness, people. I couldn't do it. I couldn't throw the hat on the ice. $50.
$50.
I think the people are going to be upset.
I think you're going to catch a lot of Eric Fleck on this one.
I anticipate that.
Yeah.
I would like to reiterate if I could.
Mm-hmm.
I have previously thrown hats on the ice. I typically dream about this situation. I can't wait to get rid of this hat that I'm wearing and throw it on the ice. This one had been purchased 36 minutes before.
I got you. Now, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Let's say, hypothetical situation, you're looking out the window, and old Danny Ruye is doing his city walk. I'm going fast. All right, and there's a little old lady trying to get across the street. And I swim move, get right past her, and beeline, right? And I go to my destination. Okay. And you go, why didn't you help that little old lady? And I go, well, I've helped so many little old ladies in the past. I've helped a lot of them.
This is not
you just
analogy.
You just weren't there. You didn't see me do it. But this time, I didn't do it. What would you say to me?
Well, I would say that's not analogous. That's what I would say.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Street Easy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. but that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, Street Easy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Almacid, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Almacid has been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Almacid with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almacid.com. That's almased.com.
How come?
They have nothing in common.
Really?
You didn't just spend $50 on the little old lady.
Yeah, that is true. We have done that, and with John, he's another person who's been a great commander, a great person for this franchise, and he's going into the last year of his deal, and wanted to give him and his representation, Blake Baratz, who's a really good agent. They just talked about it and said wanted to be able to explore opportunities, and so we let them do that, and we're staying in contact with them nearly every day. Just texted with them this morning, and really everything's still on the table in terms of whether it's a trade or staying here or whatever. So we're still going through that. It's kind of early in the stages. We haven't done a lot of exploring yet, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
Adam Peters, GM Commanders, on Jonathan Allen, who with his agent's help will now seek a trade. Sounded to me like there, I don't know if you agree with this, Danny, that maybe they came to Washington wanting an extension or, hey, let's get
or
some more
something, yeah,
money and add to this contract. Washington said, nah, we're good. And then they said, okay, well, let us look around to try to have that possibility for him to get one more bite at the apple. And look, you give the organization all that he has with blood, sweat, tears, leadership, then they'll do right by you on the back end generally in good business. And that's kind of where they are. They feel like with Daron Payne and Johnny Newton, the ability to find D tackles like they were able to last year with Holmes and Day and some of the guys that played that position, obviously they could still draft someone in the mid rounds. They could go out and sign somebody as well, saving money without Allen. It would make sense for both parties if he were to find a home. So the question now becomes, what will they get for John Allen? And that's what we want to hit on the phones with you guys at 800-636-1067. Before we answer that question, our poll of the day is actually Allen-related as well. Each and every day on this show, we give you a poll on the 1067 The Fan Twitter account you can go vote on. And right now, we're asking you, our poll of the day presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage, local, long-distance, residential, commercial, 3 decades of best-in-class service and experience. What would you prefer to happen as far as Allen and the Commanders go this offseason? Trade him for a draft pick, release him outright, and get the cap space, or keep him on the roster? So for me, I think it's pretty easy. You want to trade him, get a draft pick, even if it means you don't get as much of the cap space, if you've got to eat some of that or help pay some of that to get a decent pick. Like, if I could get a fourth and send some money with him, mm-hmm, I would gladly do that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that should be the goal in terms of getting a trade done. I just don't know. I mean, hey, this is one of my worst skills. I've got a lot of bad ones. I'm always stunned at what people fetch on the open market in terms of trades.
I also think it's impossible to know.
Yeah.
Like, you might be bad at it. I think everyone's bad at it. We all are.
Yeah.
Do GMs really know what guys are worth before they start calling around? I bet you they don't.
Yeah, who knows, right? I mean, you could be talked to nearly anything. But just on paper, to me, this is one of those, if I'm a team, I'm going, I can't give you a premium pick, talking about Washington. Because if I just wait, you're probably cutting him. And then we're going to sign a whole new deal anyway. And if I trade for him, it's probably with the idea that I'd want him here and we're going to have to sign a new deal, right? Like, he's not happy with it, the whole point of this trade operation. So that's why we're seeking a trade. You're seeking a team willing to sign you to the deal that you're looking for in potential free agency. And you're just basically you're negotiating with one team instead of all of them in the free agent market. I know he's getting cut. I'm not going to have a big proxy fight there, or a bidding war, rather, is the thing I was looking for. So I think a four would be amazing. To me, it's probably in that round five range.
Yeah, I would even expect a five, or maybe even be happy with a five. I'm thinking it's a late round pick. It's a day three pick. Because if I'm in a team trying to trade for John Allen, I'm taking on a contract you don't want. 1 year at 20 plus million right now. Washington doesn't want to do that. There's a really good chance you just release him outright, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
If I know that, then I'm not giving you a whole lot. So again, this is where I'm offering if I'm the Commanders. I've got all the cap space in the world. I really don't need more cap space. Do we really think they're going to spend all the cap space they have even at this moment with the cap having leaped exponentially, with them already having had the third most space? Now, if you were to trade him, release him, whatever, you're creating even more space, maybe upwards of $16 million in savings. There's only so much money that they need.
Yeah.
Like, I wish they spent up to the very limit. They're not going to do that. We saw that last year. We've seen it around here for years, all the way back to Bruce Allen. They roll a bunch of this money over. They save it. And it's a pretty practical, prudent, smart thing to do in terms of building over several years. But because you don't need that money, pay for the draft pick.
Mm-hmm.
An extra round based on, hey, instead of you taking on his, I'm just making this up, but his full $22 million or whatever, we'll give you $8 million with him. We'll pay down part of this salary, and then you give us an extra round better in the draft. Like, that's the kind of creativity I hope they can work out.
I love that.
But I'm with you on just the value's not great. You would have had to have traded him probably last offseason, and you might have gotten a day two pick. And even that's bullish, I'm not sure. But you probably could have gotten two earlier day three picks. Now it's, you know, this is, to me, this feels like a five or a six or something like that.
I think that's the window.
Or a pick swap. It seems like Adam Peters is a big pick swap guy. Jared's in Rockville on Grant and Danny. What do you think they can get for Allen?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
So I think, Grant, I think you're exactly right. It's a late round pick. It's definitely a day three. But let me say this as just strictly a fan perspective, and I'm an emotional fan. I would do anything to keep John Allen on this team. And I understand that maybe his production has gone down, his sack total, all that stuff. But just something about the fact that we drafted him, he was a hit first round, he's a life for Washington, he's from here, and the fact that he could potentially end his career here, and then I would think he'd get into the Ring of Fame, you know, almost like a Ryan Kerrigan is just sort of the loved one that we haven't had for a long time. I think if you actually talked him, there's a small chance he would, I don't want to say make a pay cut, but maybe consider something where he can stay here another 2 or 3 years and then sort of retiring to the glory that way.
I love that idea. I'd wonder. I would go, listen, if I'm the team, I'm going, we can't pay what's close to, that's not quite top of the market, but it's close. It's upper market, and we're not going to get upper market production. But we still value you. You're part of this culture that we're trying to change here. You have seen the bad, and you did everything you could to come back and be part of the good. We would like you to continue to do that, understanding your role is going to be slightly different going forward, but we still value some of those intangibles, some of the leadership. You're one of the, you know, I call them the Saturday night guys, right? Where it's before a big game, he's one of the guys that might stand up and say something. Bobby Wagner's done it and others. I like you an awful lot, and you have been here in Washington and done everything right. Could we tear this deal up and sign something else that maybe gets you some guaranteed money, but it's not, maybe not what you would get on the open market? And now if he's not willing to do that, fare thee well. I wouldn't have any ill will or ill feelings. I just, it would take two to tango right there. But I love the sentiment.
Yeah, I think we have reverence here correctly for the guys that have been here a while and played at a high level on some bad teams. But this, to me, would be a case of putting our guy over and like venerating someone where, do we need to? I mean, are we sure? Like, I'm an Allen guy. I don't want to be Mr. Robot here.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about, like, Kerrigan, and I don't know. I mean, I think he's made a Pro Bowl, maybe two Pro Bowls in his career. He's had some very good seasons. Again, he was the best player and the most important leader in the locker room at times during his career. He went to Stonebridge High School. He's a local guy.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a good relationship with him. He's been good to the station, and he's great to fans, and he's called into our show many times, and he gave away tickets to some big games on our show, used us as a platform to do that, and that was very cool. I like the guy, but I think when you get into the business of like letting your emotions help you make decisions, yeah, but he's from here, and he's been here the whole time, mm-hmm. and let's have him finish here, and let's put him up there in the rafters. If you want him in the Ring of Fame, he could be in the Ring of Fame still. Like, having him around for a couple of more years getting 4.5 sacks ain't going to change whether or not he was a Ring of Fame player, in my opinion. So I am all for a year too early, not a year too late. That is my general philosophy. And I would not always be maybe beloved as, like, Mr. Feelgood, but I don't know that that's how you win very often either. I think you got to make really tough decisions.
Yeah, there's some really hard parts, and this is one of them.
Let's go to Jay in D.C. on Grant and Danny. How are you, buddy?
Hey, what's up, you guys?
Hey, Jay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, bud.
Yeah, I got two things. First, like, how often do players actually even find an actual trade partner? And I actually don't think they want to find anybody. I'm hoping he actually stays, but I just want to say, like, I love the guy. Like, I'm a fan. I don't work for the team. And I do think people can be robots sometimes and be like, oh, let's get rid of this guy, all that kind of stuff. Like, I don't have any books with the team or anything. I just want the guy to stay. He's one of my favorite players. He's from Virginia. He is a true fan, and he speaks like the fans speak. So I'm rooting for him to stay, even if it doesn't make sense. I did hear, like, people were reporting that he had some issues with the coaching staff and stuff, like, in the beginning of the season, and I think that's probably why this is happening, on top of, the like, his progress with the team. But I don't care about stats. Like, I wanted Rock Cartwright to stay on the team.
Like, yeah, like, I mean, if you just want your guys, say. Like, as a fan, I like
that guy. Yeah, I
don't
begrudge that at all, yeah.
That's what fandom is. That's awesome. What Adam Peters is doing, his job's a little different. PFF is just one metric. I always try to say that. It's not the end-all, be-all. But it is tangible, quantifiable number. His overall grade this year was the worst that we've seen in a while. It was 54.6, which ranked 119 out of 219 basically inline defensive players. So you're talking about him having been just below average in their grading. And in terms of run defense, they had him 178 out of 219. Now, do I think he was actually that bad against the run? I don't. But I know that this team couldn't stop the run. He was not a big part of the second part of the season. Obviously, he was injured. I thought he played really well at the end of the year when he came back. And at the right price, as you said, absolutely, this is a guy you still want on your team. But we're talking about one of the higher-paid D-tackles in the league this season. And if you can save a ton of money by not having to pay him, remember, they just drafted a D-tackle in the second round who's got to play basically in the first round in Johnny Newton. He's not going to get better playing 35-40% of snaps. That guy's got to be on the field. So I think the wheels have been in motion here for a little while. Again, this should not surprise anybody. We've been talking about this for months.
Yeah, you could see the writing on the wall, right? As the career arc progressed, we didn't get some of the same huge, massive, disruptive plays that we're used to seeing over the last couple of years. I know the injury really changed the arc of this season. But in terms of, again, you don't want to major in. Now, when you're really bad, you kind of have to do this every once in a while. You have to pay great money for good. And if he was making, I'm just making this number up, $15 million this year, I think it's a different conversation. And that was his cap number. That's more closer to the middle of the pack. But his cap number, just again looking at AAV, so I haven't done everybody's cap number this year, but in terms of annual average value, is the eighth highest paid defensive tackle in the sport, right? Like that 22 plus, you can't have that because he's not the eighth best tackle in the sport. You can't do that too many times and field a great team.
There
and that's
was
what
a
we're
time
looking
that
at.
He was,
yes,
and that time's no longer.
Yeah, and that's okay. Like right. if there was a, I don't know, I got to make it up a number. There's a $15 million cap hit. Now all of a sudden, hey, that's a little bit more reasonable.
Let's go to the Rude guest hotline. Rude,
do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Most reliable heating and air conditioning products in the DMV. And that's where we find our friend, the award-winning reporter from WUSA TV 9 in town, Eric Flack. Eric, thanks for a few minutes. We appreciate it. How have you been?
I'm good, fellas. How are you? Are you guys catching up on your sleep in the off season?
We're working on it.
No, for me. I have a newborn, so no.
That's right. And Danny, I have not spoken to you since. Congratulations.
Thank you, pal. Appreciate you.
Children are a miracle, and he or she could not be luckier with you as a father. So
that's sweet.
Way to go, buddy. Way to go.
Boy number three. That's what Danny makes. He's got three boys.
Hey, you're going to have a basketball team here pretty soon.
That's right.
If you need some undersized white shooters, I got you.
You're my guy. I love it.
So, Eric, you came out with a story today that I think's been a long time in the making here, in that this is something I kept referencing as seemingly pretty obvious to me, which is if we go from all of the space out in Landover to the RFK site, the best thing about the current stadium that is beloved by tens of thousands of fans goes away massively, and that is the tailgating.
Yep. There is no question about it. And I think, you know, what our reporting did was just confirm what you kind of point out could be kind of obvious to anybody who's paying attention. They're just, the math doesn't work. The one thing, and I was staggered by this, 144 acres of parking lots around Northwest Stadium FedEx Field. So, you know, for all of us who have been out there and who have seen those sea of parking lots, and it really is the one thing that it has going for it, is ample tailgate space. You know, that's a lot of acreage. And just by comparison, and you know this number if you've been following the RFK campus story, but the RFK campus, the total piece of land that they fought to get back from the federal government is 174 acres. So only 30 acres larger than the parking lots at FedEx Field. When you consider the fact that to make a deal, which still hasn't been made for the mayor, to get some of the swing votes on DC Council, if she's going to get them, to approve this stadium, assuming she gets a deal done with the Commanders, she's going to have to make concessions. And those concessions are the biggest objections, other than using taxpayer money, is, of course, using the last developable piece of considerable land in the district for a sports facility, for a football stadium, when there are ample other needs, including green space, housing, retail, things of that nature. So what she absolutely has committed and is going to have to use a lot of that land, that 174 acres, for these things to appease people, meaning housing, meaning 30 acres has to be, 30%, which is 52 acres, has to be recreation. And then there's the space that's needed. It's 20 to 25 acres just for the building, just for the stadium itself. So there's a balance of about 100 acres left for housing and retail and entertainment. And there's just no room for, I don't know, I mean, not just a lot of parking lots. I'm unclear about whether there's going to be any surface parking. I'm starting to hear whispers that when it comes to fans, it's parking garages only, a la Nats Park.
So that's what I want to get into. Are we talking about no tailgating? Or are we talking about very little tailgating?
I am under the impression we are talking about no tailgating on property. So does that mean, as this is going to be a living, breathing, and we're going to act under the assumption that this deal is going to get done, okay, that there's going to be an RFK 2.0. This is going to be a living, breathing organism where the whole campus is going to look different in 5 years than it's going to look in year one, meaning year 5 years into the stadium as opposed to year one. And the development and the business involvement is going to be different. So, you know, I've been told, hey, year one, year two, are there going to be places where you can kind of tailgate or find spots to tailgate? Yes. You know, as things get congested, as this living, breathing organism gets going and becomes more and more successful and more businesses want to buy in down there, ultimately, you know, what little space is left over just adjacent to the stadium, potentially, even that goes away. And the best example is the same stadium that the mayor is comparing her pitch to in her presentation to current NFL stadium. She's using U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis as a comp. She uses it in her presentations, and says this is kind of what we envision. And I've talked to fans there, and they have told me that tailgating has basically become a non-factor there at the stadium. So, you know, the tailgating tailgating days very well may be a thing of the past when it comes to the new RFK.
Eric Flack with us here on G&D. So, Eric, here, just what's your reaction to this? If you've got Lambeau Field, or if you've got some historical thing where, you know, you're never going to change it, you can upgrade and renovate, but it's kind of this timeless classic, like thinking in baseball, Wrigley Field or Fenway Park or whatever, you don't need to do anything. But if you're building a new stadium, in order to get the economics to make sense, where it costs $2 billion, $2.5 billion, $3 billion, whatever it is going forward, no municipality, city, county, or otherwise is going to go, yeah, we'd love to foot the bill for that and, you know, make a fraction of that back over years with 15 to 20 dates. We'll do Beyonce and 9 home games. You know what I mean? There's no way to get that to fly. This is the new normal. And that's kind of my argument here is, or just my thought, is in order to have a stadium, it's got to be, you got a Hilton Hotel, you know, a Panera, a Dunkin' Donuts, and a few cafes and some restaurants and a place to walk your dog. Otherwise, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's a good point, Danny. A couple of things on that. One, just reading the kind of reaction from fans on X when I posted this story, there are, I don't know, surprisingly or encouragingly, depending on which side you're on, fans who understand that. Mm-hmm. That there was going to have to be trade-offs to come back to the district, and that is this is the kind of more modern way to do a stadium, particularly if you're going to move it downtown. Second of all, you're right. As I talk to people close to the project, they say, you know, yeah. I mean, they don't really hide the fact that this is kind of one of the concessions, but they also kind of see it as fans will get used to this. This is the way it's done. And again, when you go to what's happened in Minneapolis, those fans that are typically used to tailgating and tailgating for decades, you know, they have been upset because they now have two parking lots. And the fans told me it's $1,000 per space per season. So if you want a parking space in one of those two, you got to pay $1,000. I don't even know if there's going to be any surface parking at what would be RFK. But when you move, if you want the economic development that even Josh Harris talks about with his projects, you can't have it both ways. You can't have seas of parking lots taking up the space that you need the bars, the sports bars, the, fun places for kids, the fan zones. The places, the open spaces where they're going to have beer trucks and food trucks, and that's going to kind of be your new pregame norm. And I saw one fan reference, and excuse me, I've never been to Tampa Bay to the stadium there. Granted, Danny, you guys may have been there, but there are stadiums where they have these like fan gathering areas, and that is the new like pregame, postgame sort of ritual that replaces the tailgating thing that everybody is so accustomed to.
And Eric, you're so good at this because that's literally where I was going to go next. So when we went, I haven't been to Tampa, but Grant and I went to New Orleans, and they developed this sort of fan zone. So you show your ticket, I'm just making up the number, half a mile from the stadium, and then you don't have to do it again. Once you're inside the campus, you get free reign. Now, this just happened to be this big beer garden and a kind of a cool place to go. But there was, you could get your Bud Light, you could get your hot dog, you could do sort of whatever. You're paying stadium prices, but you're now on campus and the whole thing was hassle-free. Getting in and out couldn't have been easier. So the question is sort of, your thoughts to expound on that. But number two, what are they going to do for the tailgaters?
right? Because it's easy to say, like, hey, you'll get used to it. That's not how I want to endear myself to fans. Like, I don't want to tell you get used to something. I want to be able to say, here's what we're offering.
I don't know that they have to take your last point first, I don't think or know that they have an answer to that second part other than they think people will just have to deal with it. You know, when you talk about the neighborhoods around RFK, and this was another part of the piece yesterday in the Capitol Hill area, a lot of these neighbors, some of these, I've had pushback from the team about like everybody in those neighborhoods being against it, but there are certainly some who don't want the fallout from having a stadium and game day traffic. They fully believe that tailgaters are going to tailgate. And if there's not a lot on property, then they're going to pull up in, you know, like two blocks off of East Capitol, find a lot somewhere and just kind of do their thing on somebody's, you know, curb outside their front lawn. All of us have also been to various sporting events where, and you know, you even go to the Masters, it's like that, where people own property and they'll park you on their lawn. But I just don't, just knowing the area, there isn't lawn space like that. You know, there just isn't that much lawn space. That's the other thing that kind of differentiates the potential new RFK from some of these other stadiums. And even when you talk about M&T Bank in Baltimore, that because those areas aren't just bursting with congestion and already kind of like have people and residents, it's not a residential area, you can put up a bunch of parking lots. Like, you can put up a bunch of private parking lots. You can cater to the facility.
There's even dozens of them. I went to the game. We parked in a lot and walked. I mean, they're all over Baltimore in that little area by Camden Yards and M&T Bank.
And that has become the de facto pregame, you know, like ritual. But as you also know, part of that pregame ritual is that bar strip down there outside, you know, the Ravens games. And those can be incredibly, incredibly popular. And I believe that they envision that becoming the new norm for what they want to see at the potential new RFK stadium. But no, I don't think there's anything they can do. You know, again, I'm not hearing about surface parking for people. And I think I'm hearing a lot of talk about Metro. I'm hearing a lot of talk about, you know, other ways to get people into the game. But, you know, and again, so they're going to have one parking lot? I mean, they can do what Minneapolis does, where they have one or two parking lots and sell those, you know, to the richest fans who can pay $1,000 for a spot for a year. I mean, that kind of doesn't get to the core of the fan base who is passionate about tailgating anyway. It's not going to really, you know, appease the masses, so to speak, in that nature.
It's 2 degrees for half of their season, right? I mean, it's a big difference. Eric Flack is with us from Channel 9 in D.C., an award-winning reporter. They also have to bake this in, too. It's all they've really had as a fan base over a lot of years here, and that hopefully will change. But I come at this from a little different perspective as someone who is a part of a tailgating group every single week. You know, I'm on the email chain where they're saying what they're making, and my wife's a season ticket holder. I mean, this is their, like, a huge part of their experience. Now, for many years, Eric, I will say, they knew the game was not going to be that fun. And especially after, you know, October, the team's bad and the game doesn't matter. It's just to hang out with your buddies and you're drinking and you're eating and you're playing cornhole and throwing the football. But that was kind of the highlight. So you're going from tens of thousands of people who take that as one of the real significant joys of the experience to zero. That's very different than just saying, well, what is there at SoFi in LA or what is there in Minnesota? I mean, it's the one season you're going to be tailgating 60,000 plus people of a, you know, 80,000 at a game or whatever, and the next there's no tailgating. Like, that's just a pretty stark contrast for fans.
It is going to be a stark contrast, and I think that the reality will hit home once deals are struck and plans are released. Look, everybody can say we want it like Buffalo, or we want it like Kansas City, where you have the best of both worlds. You have you know, mountains of, you know, lots to tailgate on, and then you go inside and you kick the other team's butt, and then you go outside and celebrate. You get it all. They're not going to be able to have it all. And for a myriad of reasons, from the literal space to the politics of the deal to just potentially from a business standpoint, you know, do they want people bringing their own drinks and hanging out in parking lots and cooking their own food? Or do they want to take all of that and throw it into their pockets or into the local economy? And eliminating tailgating, and this is just me pontificating for a second, but eliminating tailgating is a good way to make sure all the dollars that are brought to the game or to whatever event is there goes into somebody's pocket, whether it be a local business, a local bar, or the stadium and the team itself.
Yeah, I think that's the end game, because it'll all end up in the team's pocket in one way or another. Whether they get the full $10 for the beer, they'll get, you know, 17 cents off the tax of it or something like that. But I think that point stands, Eric. So the one thing I want to just want to close with, though, is in terms of the neighborhood, I don't want to say we're underestimating that. I think everybody sort of gets that this is an obstacle, that the majority of those neighbors that bought over there and that neighborhood that's been rejuvenated and changed in a million different ways probably aren't that steamed up about the stadium itself, but they can deal with the mixed use this and the dog park that and the skate park and everything in between. But how much is going to have to be done to appease them here in this process? And that tailgate thing spilling over, I 100% think is a reality going forward, and I could see that being kind of a fight. So go into that a little bit for the neighbors.
I think, you know, I guess it was just because I was there yesterday talking to the neighbors, but I couldn't agree more that I got the sense for the first time being in that neighborhood, talking to those neighbors yesterday, they're going to fight like heck.
Yep.
To stop this. And they got Charles Allen as their, you know, council member who already opposes it. And he's just one person. He can't, you know, stop it on his own, but they're going to fight hard and they're going to need concessions. I think what I landed on with talking to some people with the team and also just talking with some people with the city as well is I think the answer to that is going to come down to an enforcement issue. I did a little segment yesterday for the story. They still have signs up like telling people they can't park on those streets during RFK events. There hasn't been an event in RFK in 7.5 years, but yet still those signs are up saying no parking. They can make laws and legislate this, that, or the other on game days about you can't park, you can't tailgate, you can't do this, you can't do that. Neighbors have said, and it is very true, the ultimate question is going to be enforcement. Is the city going to blanket the deal with tow trucks on week one, and anybody who violates to send a message, they're just pulling them out of there? So people literally get the message that not only is there a law, you're going to pay a price if you break the law for taking your party or infringing your game day into these neighbors' neighbor lawns and their streets and their curbs and that sort of thing. So that's the solution. That's something you don't know whether or not it is effective until literally day one, week one, you know, grand opening, cut the ribbon on the stadium sort of deal.
Eric Flack, the story's great. Check it out on WSA TV9 site. We appreciate you, buddy. Good insight. Thank you.
Thanks, fellas. See you.
Thank you, buddy.
Good. That is Eric Flack with the latest on the RFK site. Great spot with Eric Flack with great details on the RFK site and the likely lack of parking that's going to be available. It's going to be garages, very likely. They have to swing a bunch of deals to make this all work. So there's going to be housing and there's going to be hotels and there's going to be retail and all kinds of things. And the point is there's not going to be tailgating at all, maybe. And if there is, very, very limited amounts of it. And we want to know from those of you that go to the games and tailgate, how big of a deal breaker would that be? Because I think there are two kind of camps on this.
Yep.
I get the sense you don't think it's as big of a deal, just hearing some of your questions and thoughts. But you don't go to the games necessarily. And for someone who tailgates every weekend, I think it's a huge deal. Like, to me, this is – I was just texting a couple of the people that I tailgate with, and they're like, yeah, this would be awful. This is an absolute disaster. And there are people that feel that way. Right, it's our 106.7 The Fan Grant and Danny poll of the day, presented by Metropolitan Moving and Storage. Right now, of the respondents, 41% are saying it's a deal breaker, which is way higher than I would have thought, by the way. 34% are saying it would lessen their experience. So that's 75% of people are saying basically this would make things worse for me. And then 16% are saying not a big deal at all. 8% are saying they're indifferent. So that's about a quarter of the folks that either don't care or wouldn't be bothered by it. And there's workarounds in the sense that ideally there will be bars, there will be restaurants. But Danny, that means how many people are in the bars, right? How busy are they, what kind of service am I getting, how much more expensive is that? The answer is a lot, by the way.
Very much so. Yeah, there's an upcharge coming. Yeah. I mean, you and I were in New Orleans, and so it all depends on what's offered, too, right? You go to that that New Orleans situation, you show your ticket half mile from the stadium, you're in the grounds, you can get your beers. If you had something awesome like that, but the band's playing, everybody's making merry.
So for people that haven't been there, really quick, let me just start to cut you off. Basically, we're talking about like a bigger bullpen for Nats games.
Yeah, precisely.
Something like that.
Great way to put it. Just half mile off Bourbon Street. So you can never recreate that exactly. But still, and that was pretty good. So I wonder for the people that are going, it's a deal breaker. If you experience that, would you hate it as much? It's different. But let me just offer this super quick. You're right. I don't go to Nubs Field and don't intend to. I hate it and won't do it. I would go to a new cool stadium. And when I did go and went even RFK back in the day or went to Nubs Field, tailgating wasn't as huge a part of my experience. That doesn't change the fact that I have lots of empathy. I 100% do for those that it is a huge deal. So it's not something, just because it wasn't a huge deal for me doesn't mean I don't understand completely the way some people are going to feel. And I guess my questions and they're leading in this following direction. I don't know how to tell you guys this. I think this is inevitable. I think this is going to be the way of things. Now, I don't know that the NFL is probably going to do enough to win you over. I do think you heard Eric's sentiment, not that he's the one delivering it, but he's kind of the messenger. There's a little bit more just deal with it than I would like to take care of these incredible fans that go out and, get there at 8 o'clock in the morning for a 1 o'clock game and are, grilling their chicken and doing everything in between. It's part of that experience. And it's, sort of this collegial thing that's essential to so many people's football experiences. I do have a lot of sympathy to that. I guess kind of my point is, if you would like a really nice stadium, that when RFK's built, it didn't cost $2.5 billion. This new one's about to, right? If you want a nice stadium, it's got to have all this crap. It's got to have all the things on it to make it viable for the local municipality, which means tailgating is going to lower in priority. It's a trade-off. I think it's inevitable. I think it stinks, and I feel for you guys, but I also don't know that there's anything you can do about it.
So I agree to an extent with the inevitability point, but what's inevitable is less tailgating, less a priority, not no tailgating, which is kind of what we're talking about. We're very, very limited. We're talking about a stadium that would have some of the least tailgating available to it, probably, based on Flax reporting, in the entire league.
Just like Minnesota is, yeah.
And in this situation, and in Minnesota, because it's frigid and freezing for much of the year, and where the stadium is, that just has never really been a big part of what they do. Go tell Chiefs fans at Arrowhead Stadium, at their new place, that they're not going to tailgate. They'd riot, right? There is a culture to it.
Yep.
And frankly, it's one of the few things that actually is, I don't want to say if it's part of the, if there is a culture at Northwest Stadium, but tailgating is a big, big part of it, right? Also, in this situation, the reason the inevitability argument doesn't work that well with me is because there's two possibilities for a stadium right now. One is D.C., the other is Maryland. And there would be next to no tailgating in D.C., and there would be a lot of tailgating in the Maryland location. Would it be less than the acreage of 140-plus acres of parking lots at the current stadium? Yes, but it would be massively more. And people that want to tailgate would be able to tailgate at another 2.0 stadium out there. And that's not the case in D.C. But let's go to the phones. Let's see what people think. They're loaded. 800-636-1067. We'll talk to Rami in Falls Church. What's up, buddy?
Hey, it's Rami. How you guys doing?
Hey, bud.
Hey, so back in the day when I was going to college, this is a little bit about me. We went to Catholic University and we did a project on the RFK site to redevelop it to bring the Olympics here. And we calculated that you could fit the same parking spaces that are at RFK here and have, I think it was like 30,000 square feet of rentable mixed use space. So it can be done. And then we had an alternative plan where we developed like boats and a dock. So maybe we change tailgating from cars and sometimes, we offset a little bit with boat tailgating and then we have some more car parking. And then the last thing is the Brown site that's across from the Nats Stadium, that's all empty too. So imagine that's the parking space there, and then you ferry them up to the stadium when it's game time.
Like you're coming up with, I don't mean to jump on you because you're coming up with decent like workarounds. That's not what people want. people want to get out of their car and set up their chairs and their table and their grill and start grilling and then pull their TV out and watch the NFL Red Zone. That's what tailgating is. So, like, could you go to a boat? Could I drag a cooler and a bunch of crap somewhere else? Could I go to this one location? Yeah, it's possible. When I was at the Brown Stadium, I don't remember even why I was over there. Why would we have been in Cleveland a couple of years ago? It doesn't matter.
You in Cleveland, man?
I was like walking around down by the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and the Brown Stadium is over there, right?
Yeah.
And when I was there, there was like this lot that basically you don't get to park there, but it's where you could go to tailgate, essentially. And like I was asking people about it. I'm like, this is really the, is that what this is? They're like, yeah, it's a big pain in the butt. You got to drag all your stuff, then take it back to your car and go in. Like that's just not the same. So is it a possible workaround? Yes. But that's not really the point, I don't think. Kevin's in Lanham. What's up, Kevin?
What's going on, Grant, Danny? Love you guys, man. Listen.
Appreciate you.
I'm a season ticket holder, 10 years, and I'm tired of everybody telling me just deal with it. We have to deal with the name, just deal with it. And now you're going to tell us we got to deal with not having tailgating. It's a culture thing, especially pre- and post-game. Sometimes at the post-game, the players come out to us, and we take pictures, and they even mingle with us. It's a part of our culture for our football. And I'm just tired of everybody telling us to deal with it. Nobody's even talking about, on top of that, you're going to have to purchase PSLs, personal seat license. It's like they're trying to make this NFL experience now only for the haves and not the have-nots. In my adult life, I've finally been able to afford to buy season tickets for myself, but it's just becoming a rich man's game now. It's
totally
like,
agree. Yep.
Facts.
I don't argue with a single thing you just said. It's the unfortunate thing because the demand is so high. Because it is. They can, you know, when you hear, we got to renovate the stadium. We don't really need to renovate the stadium. You need more luxury boxes so you can make more money. More premium seats. More, you know, more on the wood or whatever for the different arenas. And I totally understand that. The goal, it's the nasty trade-off. It's the dirty little secret in this thing that's for everybody. Everybody can consume it, but not everyone can consume it in a certain way. And that's 100% the reality, and it's also where we're headed. And I don't think it's fair. His sentiment is exactly right to me, GP. The fans, you just have to deal with it.
Yeah.
I hate that, but I don't know how to avoid it.
This is not going to be 100%, but I really do think, I was telling Darius this, because Darius was saying, like, the tailgating thing doesn't bother me that much. And I'm like, I think this is going to be a, do you go to a lot of games or not kind of conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're going to go to a game or two a year, and then you probably don't care as much. But if you're a season ticket holder, yep, or someone who 10 times a year spends 12 hours or whatever out in Landover, I promise you a big part of your day is hanging out with all your buddies, having your food and your drinks at your price, not having to pay a bunch of money when you go into the stadium or to bars or restaurants. And by the way, I was first team all, let's take the Wizards and the Capitals across the river, because I love the idea of the little town center thing. But there's not a culture of tailgating in basketball. Or in hockey.
No, it's different. You get off work and go to the game.
I go to 40 Caps games a year. I've never once thought about tailgating outside of the arena somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Football is different in that regard. Tom's in Fairfax. What's up, Tom?
Hey, how you doing? My thought is, historically, with the Redskins, the Washington football team, and now the Commanders, those that have the season ticket holders, they're the ones that primarily are the ones that are out there every other week or every weekend, tailgating, having a good time and all that stuff. So they're the ones that the new ownership should be thinking, hey, as opposed to the last caller, world, deal with it. You can't. You gotta reward those that have been faithful to the team, mm-hmm, throughout the past decades when they weren't that great. And it's just time that if the new ownership group can't find it, then, you know, maybe they go somewhere else. I don't know, but
would you consider it a deal breaker, Tom?
Absolutely.
Like, you would rather stay in Maryland at a site over by Landover and have a nice tailgating situation then be back at RFK.
Yeah, definitely.
I wonder how popular that sentiment is.
I get it.
I mean, I do too. I'm not criticizing him. I wonder how
really
many people
took that stance publicly. I'd have to think longer and harder about it. But I can tell you that I don't think going back to RFK is nearly as romantic and amazing and awesome as everyone else seems to think that it would be. I want to be in the city, period. That's my interest in the RFK site, is that I want the football team to be in Washington, D.C. I want metro access to the stadium. But if it was an RFK and it was the Navy Yard, now there's no space, but let's just say Audi Field didn't exist and you could do something there, then that's cool for me. But I'm telling you that not having tailgating would be a real big problem for me. Like, it's just part of the experience. And I work these games, so I don't get to tail. I might swing through and grab a burger and high-five some people and go on my way. But in a future world where I'm not doing this and I'm taking my two sons to the game and we're just going to spend the day, the tailgate is the point. I mean, we are hanging out. I'm doing my solo stove on a chilly day. We're putting our feet up. We're in chairs, and we're watching, you know, Scott Hansen in 2036 on Red Zone on the back of our, you know, tailgate. It's just part of it. It's football, man. You can't have a football game without tailgating, and I get your point. It's happening more and more and more. But there is an option here where it doesn't have to be that way. Let's pivot, though, back to the Commanders, because there is some news on Deebo Samuel. This is from Jordan Schultz, so I guess was not picking a fight at the Starbucks today.
Fully caffeinated, yes, when he got this report.
Yes, he had not needed to go get some coffee and yell at Ian Rappaport, but he does have this nugget for us. He reports via his sources, the Commanders and the Texans both have significant interest in trading for Deebo Samuel. He says talks are progressing with San Francisco by those teams in recent days. Other teams include the Steelers and the Broncos, who have checked in, but Houston and Washington are believed to be the most aggressive. I totally believe this for two reasons. One, I think Washington wants a wide receiver two opposite McLaurin, and they'd probably prefer to go the veteran route than a kid that they're trying to develop while they also have, you know, youth that they're trying to figure out with Ben Sinnott at the tight end position and a project prospect in Luke McCaffrey, who they're going to try to get some run for this year. Two, Deebo Samuel and Adam Peters have a connection. Peters was there when they drafted and developed Deebo. He knows him very well. So assuming they have a good working relationship, and I have no reason to believe that they don't, then that familiarity should make this a easier transaction. So when I hear Washington's in on Deebo, not only does it not surprise me, but I go, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it fits, right? For a myriad reasons. You touched on some of them. I would also add the, you know, this isn't the superstar wide receiver one that's going to command $35 million in the open market. It's not replacing Terry McLaurin with a Justin Jefferson or superseding him with a Jamar Chase. This is a clear sort of, I don't want to say a tick below, but a totally different kind of player, right? There's very little overlap in terms of their skill sets. Yes, they can both catch and run, make plays after the catch, but this is a, I'm lining him up in 15 different places. It demands defense's attention. The instant you don't pay attention to him, he takes that bubble screen, that tunnel, that little hitch route, or catches a pop pass or something like that, and is now breaking tackles and he's going. The easy factor that he provides, I think, is essential for this offense going forward. I don't think you can rely simply on Kingsbury being a genius and out-scheming people, not with better opponents coming, not with enough time for the league to have studied and figured things out. You can't just get away with Jaumi Brown, Olamide Zaccheaus, Luke McCaffrey, whatever he turns into. This is a perfect fit to me. Now, contract-wise, what kind of shape is he going to be in? Injury-wise, there's a lot of things you got to be concerned about, and Peters has the inside track there in terms of knowing the guy and being able to see, like, or predict accurately which version of this guy is going to show up. The dude that's a threat all the time, or the dude that, according to some reports, wasn't in the best of shape last year and was a little bit disgruntled. Who knows how it's going to go? But again, I would trust Peters' evaluation with the background that he's got.
So I think my interest in Deebo is probably more than the average person's, if I had to guess, based on the fan base. And we can open up the phones on Deebo Samuel at 800-636-1067 for the MGM National Harbor listener lines. You guys can hit up and discuss Deebo with us, but I think he is kind of exactly what they need if he's healthy. I have concerns like everybody else. Number one, he never is 100%. When the season starts, he's a battering ram. He's super physical. He plays a really violent brand of ball. He's never run around, or kind of avoided anybody. Like, he is just a wrecking ball, cage fighter mentality wideout. He's got some Pierre Garçon in that way. And he's a big target. He's 6 foot and like 220 pounds almost. And because of that, he takes huge shots. So from the beginning of the season, you're just not going to get him at 100%. But look at how valuable he was for the best team in the NFC for years. What are you trying to be? I mean, you just played in an NFC title game. And what was a, I'm not going to call it a fluky run, but it was an unlikely run. And you're probably not authentically a perennial NFC power yet, right? But he's coming from that team in San Francisco. Do I think he'll ever have 75 catches and 1,400 yards again like he did in 2021?
I don't know.
No, he's not going to be the first-team All-Pro wide receiver. That was kind of a one-off. But could he be a 60 to 70 catch, 850 to 1,000-yard wide receiver? I think he could be a couple times. And that's not to talk about what he gives you running the football. You know Cliff Kingsbury would be interested.
Yep.
Because he's just one of those wild cards, as you referenced, that an OC is going to salivate about based on multiplicity and versatility and, you know, the differential options that he gives you to just move them all over the place. So I'm sure Kingsbury would be in. I'd have a hard time believing Jaden Daniels at the, you know, players, that's like the real recognized real thing. Players like dudes who have been stars.
Yeah.
I would think he'd be on this. He's just had such a good career. The idea of, well, he's going to be 30 years old in January, so you're getting his age 29 season, and the injuries, that's not something like players worry as much about. But while I didn't necessarily want to trade for him, I was hoping he got cut. If it takes trading for him, I could be really interested as long as you don't have to give him a juicy extension. That's my big question is, what kind of payment has to come? There's only 1 year left on his deal. The cap number's under $17 million. That's awesome. I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
But if I'm giving up a pick or two, and if it's two, it's probably later round picks, whatever. But now I got to pay him too. Like, what's that look like?
That's a great question. And that's the part that I don't know. You know, because I think part of this is, I'm sure Debo wants a new deal, and San Francisco's going, it probably doesn't make sense for us as a guy with your injury track record, given what happened this last year, given our reinforcements coming, whether it's Pearsall or, you know, we might have to not be able to pay another allocation to the receiver room. You may want close to the top of the market money. So, in other words, if you've got a trade, I'm making this up, a fifth rounder for him, knowing that you're going to have to extend him to mid-20s, next year and the year after with the injury risk, that becomes a little bit more scary to me. Now, I'm in a position here with Washington where I'm going, I may have to pay a premium because this is not a great receiver class. This is not a great free agent receiver class, especially if, you know, Higgins stays put with the franchise tag and, you know, a couple other guys don't really shake out, that I may have to do this just sort of given, I'd call it not the most sound decision, but sort of given where I am, I've got to have a talent upgrade in a few different spots, even if I've got to hold my nose and pay a little bit more than I want to for it. So I wonder where the walkaway point is for them and really for me. I don't have a great answer to that in terms of where I go, you know what, that's too rich. I can't sign you to that extension.
Yeah, I wouldn't have much interest in giving him a whole lot more than Terry McLaurin makes in that $23, $24 million mm-hmm. a year range, right? I could probably Agreed. Be talked into low 20s per year. But if you're starting to say he needs to make $24 million, $25 million a year, that's where I'm out as he hits 30 years old. By the way, do you know what Brandon Ayuk's cap number is going to be in 27 and 28 with his new extension?
Not off the top of my head, no.
So that deal's super backloaded. He has an $11 million cap hit this year and a $16 million cap hit next year. Then he is owed cap hits of $43 and $44 million in 2027 and 2028.
Wow, kind of clearly a window is right now sort of move, right, where we're going to have to pay the piper on the back end.
But as they get ready to play Purdy, Purdy's going to get, what are they paying him, maybe $62, $64 million a year
upper
or something?
50, 60, something.
I mean, there's
like
going to be cap numbers in there down the road of $70 million plus, right, before you start reworking his deal, renegotiating and pushing back money in void years. They just cannot pay Debo Samuel. Even if they wanted to, the moment they paid Ayuk that deal, it was over with Debo, in my opinion.
Agreed.
Because you can't have a cap number of 40-plus million for Ayuk and then have Debo making at that time a cap number up around $30 million with a quarterback who makes 60-plus.
Yeah, and then drafting the rookie receiver out of Florida, Pearsall, it just the writing was on
but
the wall.
But he would still
there.
Be on a rookie contract. But I'm just
saying. That's what I mean, saying like I'm not paying Debo. I got his replacement ready.
Sure,
quote,
sure.
Unquote. Yeah.
But I just mean financially the math doesn't math.
Totally, so 100%.
A lot of people are saying them moving on is indicative of he's definitely done. I just disagree with that. Same with the Cooper Kupp thing. I think this is a odd man out situation, and maybe it is also a little bit of, like, they've worn out their relationship is, they've fallen out of love. Like, Debo's trying to fight kickers, and, you know, we've seen him in the documentaries. He can be very,
he's,
you know, yeah, a loud guy on the sideline. He's fairly volatile. I think he's a good teammate from what I could tell. It seems like he's well-liked in the locker room, but I do think he's excitable and super passionate. That's not a bad thing, but maybe after a bunch of years of dealing with it, you're a little less inclined to sign up for more.
I think it's all part of it, right? I mean, the production has gone down. Now, some of that is, you know, when you look at his healthy games. He and T. Higgins both have this sort of same thing where there'll be a game where they're listed or they're active and it's like a one catch or a one target and he's a complete non-factor in it or like a zero across the board. And you look at some of the overall stats and you go, what the hell's going on? But then there are those games where he's featured, he's active, he's fully with it. And if you follow it week to week, I got a good buddy who's a 49ers fan who was saying, like, when he doesn't have any kind of hamstring, and that's a bad use of term, when he doesn't have any kind of like nagging thing, the guy's still explosive and awesome. You'll see that 6 catch for 80 yard, 2 carries for 25 yards. He'll throw a block downfield that springs a running back, and he's just incredible. And then there's the when he's nursing something, it's one target for zero. He's just kind of jogging out there as a decoy. Like, that would frustrate the hell out of me. Like, the thing that I value the most in sports is reliability. I just got to know. What am I getting? I can deal with whatever it is. I just need to know. Counting on you and not having you deliver is, you know, is kryptonite. It's backbreaking. So that would be the thing to me. They'd have to be super confident in their medical eval. They'd have to have a great plan for him to sort of maintain his health. Right? Maybe that means we don't give him any carries. Maybe that means he doesn't go between the I'm just making this up. Maybe he doesn't go between the tackles at all simply because, you know, too much wear and tear. We think that's the way to do it. Or we have to limit some of his touches or snaps. Who knows what it is? But again, the appeal is obvious. Well, right? It's that playmaker gene.
The metrics from last year on Debo in terms of separation scores and running away from DBs are not good.
Not kind, no.
He was a plotter, basically, as kind of defined by did you get open or not. Against man coverage, well below average separation score. Even against zone, well below average. So he's kind of comparable to, if you're looking at a plotted chart, guys like Kayshon Boutte from the Patriots, Jonathan Mingo, who the Panthers cut, who ended up in Dallas, Quentin Johnson, who's like a, you know, red zone threat for the Chargers, former first round pick, a little bit of a bust, but doesn't really get open. You know, that's the company he's in. The elite guys in terms of separating against man and zone are Tank Dell and Romeo Doubs and Jamison Williams and Rashad Bateman and Nico Collins and great scores for Dontavian Wicks, actually, from the Packers, although he drops a million passes.
He hates catching the ball so much. Hates
it. Oh, it's unbelievable. But Debo last year, you know, it wasn't pretty in terms of minimum of 150 zone and 70 man routes. Now, he was one of the lower graded receivers in the league. So,
and is it plotting because he's lost a step? Is it because he was out of shape? Is it because he was had nagging injuries? What caused what?
Sure,
I mean, again, that's maybe the answer is yes. That's the kind of thing you have to determine.